Rat Pack, where you at?
That pants is so hot right now.
Hey, what's going on? I'm Jeff. This is The Rant. It's Friday, July 26th. We're covering Los Angeles today, both the Chargers and the Rams on the podcast today. So let's dive right in. Let's talk some Chargers. How you like me now? John Harbaugh in the mix, and this team's going to look very different. This team is going to look very different than it did in years past, not only because Harbaugh and Greg Roman are there now, head coach and offensive coordinator, but also because no Keenan Allen, no Mike Williams, no Austin Eckler, no Gerald Everett even. Not that he was like a staple of the roster, but he's gone too. But the most important thing is you still have Justin Herbert here. Now, if you're sort of just coming back into the fold, or maybe you have over the last couple of weeks, and you come across rankings like mine, for example, over at ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off, you're going to say, whoa, wait a minute. Justin Herbert's outside of the top 12? Now, I actually have him at 13 right now, but yeah. And a big part of that is it's not only losing those wideouts, and we'll get into what he has now in a moment, but it's also John Harbaugh. Like, we know what John Harbaugh does. He's done it every step of the way. It wasn't just he ran the ball at Michigan. You know, like, that was one of the knocks on J.J. McCarthy. It wasn't that we weren't saying he couldn't throw the ball around the yard. We just didn't see a lot of it. You know, that was a knock. Like, we didn't see it out of him at the college level, and it really wasn't him. It was because that's the type of offense that Harbaugh wants to run. We saw it in the NFL when he was at San Francisco. They ran the darn ball, and guess what? We saw it at Stanford when he had one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time, you know, from a prospect standpoint, in Andrew Luck, and they ran the darn ball. That's what they're going to do this year. The backfield is a little murky. We'll get to that in a moment. But if you're wondering why is Herbert so low, that's why. But that's a good thing, because that means in one quarterback leagues, we can get Justin Herbert in, you know, the late rounds. And it means that here's a guy who could potentially exceed his ADP we're getting for, you know, bargain basement prices. And I'm okay with that. I'm more than okay with that, even given the uncertainty that he has at wide receiver. Because, yeah, your two staples are gone. Keenan Allen, now in Chicago, and obviously Mike Williams with the Jets. So they have Josh Palmer. And, you know, I have no issues with Josh Palmer. I just, there are certain players who I think would be miscast as number ones. You know, we've seen it over the years. Like, I just mentioned the Bears. When Darnell Mooney was there, he was miscast as the number one for a brief period in time. Like, he couldn't be the number one. He's not profiling as a number one. He's better suited to being a complimentary, like a number two or even a number three, but probably more of a number two, at least in that era. And maybe now, too, by the way, the number two receiver with Atlanta. But regardless, I think Palmer's in that conversation. And I would not be surprised in the least if Ladd McConkey ends up being the best fantasy option among these wide receivers. Rookie, obviously, coming out of Georgia. And, you know, he was lightly used in the college level, but he was super efficient in his time, especially last year. 3.62 yards per route run at Georgia. You know, standing out there, has a really nice athletic profile, can do a lot for you around the football field, can move into the slot. 54% of his routes were in the slot his freshman year, but then he ended up playing more on the perimeter last year, but he has the versatility to go inside or outside, and I think that's the most important thing. Not going to be much of a downfield guy, but could he replace some of Keenan Allen? Yes, he's not. It'd be foolish to say he replaces all of Keenan Allen, duh. But he could replace some of Keenan Allen, and that's not a bad thing. So right now I have McConkey at 42. I have Josh Palmer at 68. And initially, I will tell you, I had Quentin Johnston, and it's actually good that we're doing this podcast now and maybe not a week ago. I had Quentin Johnston at 68. That's very fluid. That's where I have him ranked right now. If you go to ftnfantasy.com, like today on the 26th, you'll see him there in half-point PPR. But DJ Chark was running with the ones at practice yesterday. And DJ Chark's like one of these guys, he like doesn't go away. He's almost a Brokeback guy. And if you don't know what a Brokeback guy, get your mind out of the gutter, by the way. From that film, Brokeback Mountain, there is a scene where the line is uttered, I wish I knew how to quit you.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Yeah, there it is. Thank you. So there are certain players that some of us can't quit. Like the OG was like Lee Evans or somebody like that. Yeah, DJ Chark was kind of that for some people, maybe not to that degree. Anyway, we're not drafting Quentin Johnson or DJ Chark with any confidence anyway. And really, from a tight end standpoint, I don't really know if there's a ton to like here either. Hayden Hurst is there. Will Disley is there. Donald Parham is still there. I just don't know how much they're actually going to use any one of them individually. I actually spoke to Hayden Hurst when I was in Los Angeles last weekend at the live Scott Fishbowl event and asked him specifically, like, you know, who's the guy or are you going to use a lot of 12? And he said, it's going to be between me and Will, and we are going to use a lot of 12. So I don't think there's much value to be had there. If anything, though, like, while that may not sound good for Justin Herbert, I actually think it is, because he's going to spread the ball around. He doesn't necessarily need an alpha, you know, it helps, but he doesn't necessarily need that to be productive enough to potentially give us a return on investment where he's going. All right, so let's talk about the backfield, because Greg Roman got his guys in, brought in Gus Edwards, brought in the oft-injured J.K. Dobbins. They also drafted Kimani Vidal, who was absolutely prolific at the college level. Over the last 2 years, he had 2,793 rushing yards. That was the most by anybody in the FBS. I don't take the raw stats, you know, and run with them too much, but he's a good player. He's a good player. He's an interesting player for long-term purposes. But we have some insight there as well that I'll get into in a moment. Gus Edwards figures to be the lead back. I actually asked Hayden Hurst about that, and he said Gus is the guy. Gus Edwards had offseason surgery. Gus Edwards is 29 years old. Gus Edwards is not practicing as of this broadcast today, as of this podcast. So keep an eye on that one. He's coming off a monster season from a touchdown standpoint. He had 13 rushing touchdowns. 12 of them came on goal line carries. He had 23 goal line carries last year. And sure, that was in a Todd Monken offense, but I could see a lot of that work continuing here this year under Greg Roman. But he's not going to have a lot of juice from an efficiency standpoint. Last year, 198 carries, which is good in 17 games. 810 rushing yards, which is not that good. I mean, 4.1 per carry. That was not good. He was under 3.0 yards after contact per attempt for the first time in his career, and he does nothing as a pass catcher. In 17 games, he saw 13 targets. Now, he got 12 of them, okay, but he's not going to do anything there. So you're talking about a limited ceiling, touchdown-dependent back. He's a zero RB type candidate, sure, but not going too overboard. Now, J.K. Dobbins is... It's a sad story. I really hope he does manage to stay healthy through this season. Out of a possible 67 games in his four professional seasons, he played in 24 of them. Torn ACL in 2021, re-injured knee, scoped in 2022. Last year, Achilles. I mean, it was just plays into the season that the Achilles went. He had a touchdown, too, in that game, which just totally sucks. It's hard to evaluate him, but the good news is, as of right now, he says he is fully healthy for the first time really since college, it seems like. So we'll keep an eye on it, but I'm not going to go overboard there. Now, the other thing about Vidal that I wanted to bring up is Jarrett Patterson is running ahead of him in practice right now. The undersized, the pint-sized Buffalo product who was with Washington for the start of his career here, super productive at the college level, but that doesn't really mean much at the pro level. But it is telling that he's running ahead of Vidal, at least right now. We'll keep an eye on it. You know, that sort of like late round grab Kimani Vidal trends may not be really a viable approach in the middle of next month if he's going to be the number four or possibly a practice squad guy. Now, that doesn't mean it's sticking, but that's at least the latest word here since we're just at the very beginning of training camp for most of these teams. So it is worth noting there. All right, let's move over to the Rams. The Rams, obviously, in a surprisingly good spot. Last year, I thought this team was, well, with the exception of like Aaron Donald, Matthew Stafford, and Cooper Kupp, exceedingly young, inexperienced, and had a head coach who legitimately the year before had considered stepping away. Now, McVay has come out and said that part of what he has changed is he's not working 18 hours a day anymore. He said that he was an idiot for doing so. He almost looked at it in the past as a badge of courage, and now he looks back and is like, why would I even do that? You know, I'm going to make better decisions if I'm more well-rested. And he made great decisions last year. The team exceeded expectations, and a big part of it was Matthew Stafford. He was healthy, and he looked like vintage Stafford. And he also found a connection with a guy who none of us expected to be as good as he was in Puka Nacua. Stafford throws for 3,965 yards, 24 passing touchdowns. It's not amazing, but it's like it's solid enough Superflex production in 15 games. He can be a boring Superflex starter, and I'm totally okay with that. I'm at QB 18 right now. He could also be a safe option if you like to go safe and upside like I do in one quarterback leagues. And a big part of it is he has these weapons at his disposal. He has Nacua. He has Kupp, who apparently is now back to full health and looking good so far in the offseason and into camp. And then, you know, you had that late season standout stretch run from DeMarcus Robinson, who the team did re-sign. You know, he was sort of the vertical presence because Nacua and Kupp aren't going to be vertical presences in this offense. So Robinson, 14.3 yards downfield down the stretch was his air yards. That's really good. You know, down that those final six games of the season when he scored four touchdowns over that span, he was targeted double-digit targets twice over that span as well. So not a fantasy viable guy, more of a this is a reason why Matthew Stafford has some appeal as a top 20 option. Let's move over to Nacua and Kupp. Nacua had one of the most prolific rookie seasons we've ever seen. He broke Bill Grohman's receiving yards mark, rookie receiving yards mark of 1473. Of course, he had 1486. That was 1960 that record was set. Now, the rookie receptions record is much more recent. It was Jalen Waddle only a couple years ago of 104. Nacua had 105. He also set a playoff record. I mean, he did everything, and it's even more surprising that he did so as a really unheralded day three prospect. Now, to be fair, at BYU, he did lead the nation among qualifiers in yards per route run, so he was super efficient, but he was at BYU. He wasn't playing the highest caliber of week in and week out of competition, but he went out and he did it. And then if you saw him, like this dude's out there in like all-star game, you know, celebrity all-star games, basketball wise, and he's out there throwing down dunks left and right. Like the kid's really athletic, and he apparently has worked even harder this offseason. So I think there's a step forward for Puka Nacua here. As crazy as that sounds, as big as that rookie season was, I really do not think it was a fluke. There was maybe one issue with him, and it's a correctable issue. He did have a lot of drops, but he had 160 targets. He had 13 drops, by the way. Not worried about it. Really not worried about it. I'm drafting him as a top 10 option. I currently have him at 7. So that means you're going to have to take him, if it's not the back end of the first round, then it's early second round if you're looking to get a piece of him. But actually, maybe Cooper Kupp represents better value than Nacua. I mean, I think that argument could be made. I mean, Nacua, you're not going to squeeze any more juice out of that at that range, but Cooper Kupp, I have a wide receiver 24. I'm seeing him go anywhere from like 20 to 24, right in that range in the back end of the wide receiver twos. And sure, he's 31 years old. We don't expect him to regain his 2021 form. That was a historically good season. We don't call it historically good if it happens every year, right? The efficiency was off the charts, and it was off the charts really in 2022 before the injury happened. Now, last year kind of came back to the pack for sure and took a backseat to Nacua, but they could be a 1-2 combo this year. And you don't need Cooper Kupp to produce elite numbers if you're drafting him as the 24th wide receiver off the board. So I actually don't mind it if he slips a little bit. You know, I have no issues with taking him this year. And I gave you my thoughts, of course, on Robinson. Now, Tyler Higbee figures to start the season on PUP. That's a mandatory minimum absence of 4 weeks. This is according to Sean McVay. He hasn't been placed on it yet, and he shouldn't be, because if you place a player on PUP, reserve PUP right now, you can put him on active PUP. That's a training camp list. But reserve PUP, if you do that right now before final roster cutdowns, that is, you're basically putting them on season-ending IR. It's the same thing. So they don't want to do that, just in case. But a lot of the talk has been the team bringing in Colby Parkinson and this notion that Parkinson may be the replacement for Higbee. I don't know if I see that. Like Parkinson, what has he done to give us that indication over the course of his career with Seattle? He had 25 catches each of the last two seasons. That's career best. That's it. On 34 targets, actually really consistent. Two touchdowns each of those seasons. Like he hasn't done much on that front. He actually did stay in the block a lot. He was asked to block on 14.5% of his passing plays. Only four qualifying tight ends stayed in to block more frequently than him. He's a blocking tight end more so than a pass catcher. And I also, you know, I don't like to just run with ideas because, well, hey, I work in fantasy, therefore I know. Like, I know I don't know a lot of things. So I want to go to the people who do know more things about particular teams than I do. And one of them with the Rams, if you think Rams beat writer and you're not thinking Jordan Rodrigue, well, I mean, I don't know who else you're thinking of because she's like the top name there. And I heard her on a podcast with Greg Rosenthal over at NFL say, fantasy players shouldn't sleep on Davis Allen. That does not mean we draft Davis Allen. That does not mean that at all. It means we pay attention to Davis Allen. Rookie last year, very much overshadowed in a loaded rookie class at tight end. And yet down the stretch, he produced when asked to step in for Tyler Higbee. And if you squinted, you know, you looked a little squint, it almost looked like Tyler Higbee out there, like very similar style, body type, that sort of thing. So I don't think that's very clearly, oh, it's just Parkinson until Higbee comes back. It could be a combination of both of them. Heck, Davis Allen could surprise us, or it could be neither of them. You know, you never quite know. The point is there's not much value in drafting a tight end here. Not any value in drafting a tight end. We'll just keep an eye on it. Okay, Kyren Williams. Coming off of a massive surprise season in 12 games, 1,144 rushing yards, 12 rushing touchdowns, caught 32 balls for 206 and three. He was awesome. He was a little dinged up, but he was awesome. And heading into this year before the draft, we thought, oh, Kyren Williams could potentially be a first-round fantasy selection. Well, that certainly changed when the team took Blake Corum. He went to the wrong LA team, right? They took Blake Corum out of Michigan and did so as one of the top running backs off the board. Wasn't a great running back class. And people immediately assume, uh-oh, that's bad news for Kyren Williams. But then the team comes out and basically says, now this is Les Snead, the general manager, and we, I believe, heard from Sean McVay on this front as well. Their goal is to spell Kyren Williams a little bit, but not to bring in competition. Blake Corum actually is a very similar player when you look at him from a build standpoint. He's maybe a little thicker than Kyren Williams, but they're both shorter, stockier guys. They have very similar playing styles, that sort of thing. This is a backup situation. We've even just heard from the beat now. I'm hesitant to call him beat because he's more of a national reporter, but Charles Robinson over at Yahoo saying Kyren Williams is the clear number one and Blake Corum is the clear backup, therefore. So we've been down this road many years. This happens all the time. It happened last year in their rival Seattle Seahawks backfield. We had Kenneth Walker coming off of an impressive rookie season. Now, obviously, Williams wasn't a rookie last year, but, you know, it was his first run at the starting gig. And then they drafted Zach Charbonnet, and the immediate assumption was, uh-oh, he's going to take a lot of work off of Walker's plate, blah, blah, blah. And all said and done, Walker's touches were reduced by a half touch per game. Not a big deal. And we could very likely see very similar things here. So again, I'm not ranking Kyren any longer as like a top three option. Right now, though, I do have him at seven. Here are the backs who I have ahead of him. McCaffrey, Bijan, Breece, Taylor, Gibbs, Barkley. That's it. So he's a second round selection. And if I drafted Kyren Williams, immediately Blake Corum has to move up in my board. I have to move him up a couple rounds because I want to make sure I handcuff him because I do think, just given his size profile, Kyren could miss time. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast here, so I would want to protect that investment. And I will tell you this, if Kyren goes down, Blake Corum slides right into that role, plays basically the identical role. So important there, but Kyren is still an RB1, no doubt about it. All right, so there's the Rams for you. Let's get into some mailbag stuff because you guys are busy yet again. A lot of emails here. If you want to email me, I set up an email address for you. The rantpodjr@gmail.com is the email. Let's go to Joseph here. He said, welcome back. Thank you. I've been here all along, but I guess the rant, it hasn't. So what? I appreciate it. He goes, I have most of your strategies down except the playing your opponent aspect. This is where I always talk about, like, you know, play the man, not the ball. Like everything we do in fantasy football is against our opponents. It isn't just in the games themselves. Waivers is against our opponents. When we trade, we're playing against our opponents. When we draft, we're playing against our opponents. All of that, right? And it's a mindset thing. He said he's picking out of the two hole, and he's got It looks like he's got Justin Jefferson. Did you take Justin Jefferson second overall? Interesting. And he has JT, Jonathan Taylor, in the first two rounds. All right. He said, assuming I'm not just grabbing value on the board, which could cause people to abandon a strategy, what should I be monitoring during the drafts? Are my neighbors at pick 1 and 3 my primary opponents? No, I would say everybody in the draft is your primary opponent. So if it's a 12-team league, there are 11 teams who are your opponents. And while you may, like sometimes people make a big deal that they're drafting next to somebody who knows what they're doing. Sure, they know what they're doing, but what if the other 10 people in your draft don't? Then they're going to make a lot of mistakes and you too can just clean up on those mistakes. So it's everybody. What should you be monitoring? I monitor things like who's going quarterback early, who's going tight end early, where, you know, what do the builds look like? If I ever am in a draft and I don't always know everybody, like most of my, I know everybody obviously in my home leagues. Sometimes I'm in an industry draft where I may not know somebody that well or never drafted against them. And then I'll look at what are they doing in the first couple rounds? Like, are they going value-based, sort of BPA approach, best player available? Are they actually deploying some strategy? Are they hyper-aggressive going zero RB? Like, that'll give me an indication of who they are. And it is important to know your opponents. Like, draft day, you can really size up your opponents for the rest of the season as well. So it's not necessarily like I say, play the man, not the ball, but you're not on the court, like, defending the player, but you should know your opponents and you should be paying attention to what they're doing or what they aren't doing for that matter. And it's across the board. So good question, Joseph. All right. Paul checking in, and the title of the email is Not Taking CMC 101. Said long time listener, first time caller. No, he didn't. He said long time listener, 2 year subscriber at FTN going on year 3. Appreciate you. Appreciate you. He says his question is this. He's in a 12 team league. One quarterback, 2 running back, 2 wide out, 2 flex, 1 tight end, kicker, defense. He said he hates the way all of his mocks have looked taking McCaffrey. Is it crazy? I laughed there. Is it crazy to take CeeDee Lamb or Tyreek Hill? Well, he's not saying any crazy players. And he's saying because of the double flex. Well, I'm not even worried about the double flex. Usually I have this rule that if you say, is it crazy? Yeah, it usually is. But here, let's talk about it this way. Ultimately, your decision at number one is going to come down to who you have at number one on your board. If you do not believe that Christian McCaffrey is the number one overall player, then don't have him at number one on your board. If you think it's CeeDee, put CeeDee there. If you think it's Tyreek, put Tyreek there. I think a case could be made for all of those guys. If you wanted to get cute, like even getting to Ja'Marr Chase territory is kind of getting cute. But if you said like Breece Hall, I think you're getting way too cute. I think you can make an argument there, but that all comes down to you. Like if you're asking me, what would I do? I'm taking McCaffrey and I'm totally fine with my build from there. I am 100% fine. If you don't like that, then, you know, structure your board accordingly. I don't think those players though actually are crazy. It's not how I would go, but I don't think it's crazy. Travis checking in, and he said, before he asks his question, he wants to say he loves the show. He's been listening to it all the way since back when I was with Mike Clay. Wow. That's the last time I worked with Clay. I actually did do a broadcast with him on earlier this week. But the last time I worked with Clay, I was at PFF, and that was 2015 before he left for ESPN. So you're old school, Travis. Appreciate you. He has a 12-team league, doesn't know his draft position. They have one keeper, will lose 2 rounds. So it's a 2-round escalation. He said he's choosing between Dalton Kincaid or Zamir White. Kincaid is in the 8th. Zamir White is in the 16th. I'm not really worried about the future here. I'm worried about the present when I make a keeper decision. So first and foremost, the number one thing I will do is I will compare the values of the picks based on the value of the player. So Dalton Kincaid right now, he is higher on my board than Zamir White. Kincaid, I have a 5th round grade on. What do I have Zamir White at? 8th round? I have to double check on that one. But as I'm double checking here, so my objective then is to compare that to the picks. Now, you can't just raw compare it, though. You can be like, well, I have an 8th round and he's 16th, so I get 8 rounds of value. Not, it doesn't work that way because those picks in the late rounds aren't worth as much as picks higher up. So that has to be a part of the equation. Now, I will be releasing this here shortly, the keeper value chart. Actually, I have a 6 round value on Dalton Kincaid. Oh, and I have a 7th round value on Zamir White right now. So it seems like, you know, on the surface, I'm not doing the math, white offers slightly better value. However, at the same time, you're probably not making that keeper decision for another month. So a lot will happen between now and then. And we could get indications that might move Kincaid up my board. You know, like my rankings today are not going to be my rankings next month. But it's more about the process of deciding as opposed to who we specifically decide. That's ultimately going to come down to your decision, right? Adam has a non-fantasy question. Okay, here we go. Said he's a longtime listener on Sirius, subscriber on FTN. Appreciate that. Listens only 1 hour, not on social media. So he doesn't listen to the whole radio show, is what he's saying. He's never asked any questions on social media. Lifelong Raiders fan. He said he'd love to leverage my rookie scouting. Okay. If Aiden O'Connell was in the 2024 class, how would I rate him compared to the quarterbacks who were actually drafted in the first round? He would not rate with them. I would probably have him in the sort of Rattler range, which puts him as a day three guy. Not somebody who really moves the needle for me. Made a lot of mistakes last year. Now, granted, he was a rookie quarterback in the NFL. I'm not going to hold it against him, but would have profiled for me not as a start. If I put a first round grade on you as a prospect in the NFL draft, I think you're going to be a starter. And I had a first round grade on, essentially all of those guys, although I didn't think Bo Nix was going to go in the first round, so I'm glad he did. I really like Bo Nix. I actually really like him. I don't think Aiden O'Connell has those chops. So sorry to the Raiders fan right there, Adam. Appreciate you. Michael checking in. We'll do one more here. He said he's been listening back in the PFF days. Appreciate that. He said he uses the Anchor RB. We can call it Hero RB as well. Pretty religiously. He said this year he is keeping Breece Hall at a third round cost. So he would consider him to be his anchor. Here are the list of wide receivers that he's projecting to be kept. Amon-Ra, Justin Jefferson. He's got Wilson, Ayuk, Olave, Evans, London, and Pittman. He is picking 10th. Would I still suggest going with a wide receiver in the first? Yeah, absolutely. So if I have an anchor, here's what happens to my draft board at running back. The rest of the players at running back, if they aren't already at a 7th round or later value, they all become 7th round. So if... let's say I just drafted Breece Hall. He'd be a first-round pick. Jonathan Taylor's still on the board. Well, guess what? Even though originally I had Jonathan Taylor in the second round, I now have Jonathan Taylor in the 7th round. And that is not me saying I expect Jonathan Taylor to be there in the 7th round. It's me valuing him there. Now, I know he's not going to be there. But in valuing him that way, now I'm forced to address wide receiver, and I'm going to have to hammer the position. So yeah, there are still going to be wideouts there. Like a lot of these guys are kept, but you still need to load up at the position. You still need ammunition, and keeping Breece Hall in the third round is good value, but you do need that ammunition. All right, I still have plenty of these in the hopper. So if I haven't gotten to you yet, I will. There's just so many of these emails. Good problem to have. therantpodjr@gmail.com, and no voicemails today so far. We'll get back to these, I guess, next week. But if you want to call in over the weekend, 215-720-1708, leave a voicemail. It can be a bit, it can be questions, whatever. It could be both, like yesterday. And if you do a good job, I'll play it on the air. I will play it on this podcast, and I'll talk to you. So there's that. At Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram. And of course, FTNFantasy.com. Use the promo code RATPACK for 10% off. You want cheat sheets? Just did a full-scale projections and rankings update, like massive projections and rankings update. All the great content, articles continuing to come out, and the keeper value chart, which people love. That part of the article is paywalled. But that actually just released while I was recording this. So that'll officially be up. People love that every year. FTNFantasy.com. All right, so next week's going to be more of a normal week where I'm going to do Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So we'll be back to it. We'll continue the preview series here. Up next on the list, man, so we got Los Angeles out of the way. Both LA teams are in the hopper. That means we're heading to Miami to talk about the Dolphins and Minnesota. Really interesting quarterback situation. I have some intel that I'll pass along on Monday's podcast. Until then, enjoy your weekend. I'll catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out.